So thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure as an outsider, quote unquote, as a consumer, fan, and user of IT and informatics to be able to exchange ideas and impressions with the community, and I always find it extremely productive. And my role today here is really to try to describe part of the landscape that I think will shape the development of medical informatics and informatics in pathology, and try to do it from the point of view of how will change in the way we look at tissues drive the development and the tools that we need to implement those new technologies and the new science. And it really is all about bringing cutting-edge technology and science to the art of diagnosis. And so there will be a few themes that will come repeatedly throughout my presentation, I hope. And one is, as Jeff Myers mentioned, the confluence of AP and CP. For many years, the two disciplines have remained rather separate and isolated in terms of conceptual interaction. But more and more, I think, there is a confluence both on the intellectual level and at the technical level that I think makes this fusion, if you wish, unavoidable. And in fact, the fusion process, I think, will continue. And I would argue that the fusion should include a transdepartmental fusion with other diagnostic modalities like radiology, to really think about diagnostic medicine rather than either radiology or anatomical pathology or clinical pathology. Because what it's all about at the end is formulating a diagnosis that allows us to treat, prognosticate, and implement personalized medicine for a given patient. So at the end, I will propose to you that perhaps one possible solution that integrates many of these currents is what we call clinical systems pathology. And if we do have time, I would like to make some comments and also hear your reaction about the challenges that we will have in the future in terms of training and creating a body of professionals that are comfortable, understand, implement, and can continue to develop these lines of research. Now, anatomical pathology classically has many, many features and traits, but I think we all would agree it can and is an integrative discipline in the sense that we'll all use knowledge from epidemiology, the clinic, radiology, diagnostic imaging, morphology to formulate a diagnosis. It is interpretative in the sense that we do not read slides, but we interpret slides because we don't have enough information content that's discrete to make a reading, but rather we put patterns together and we give value to the patterns and we organize them in a way that they eventually formulate a diagnosis that hopefully it's a correct one. And third, it is experiential, so it's based on experience, and really it is difficult sometimes to teach a resident very fast to reach a certain level because you just need flight hours at the scope to develop the sense, the judgment, and the sense of security that, again, is conducive to integrate the right elements for a right diagnosis. Now, when we study disease, we all think in two compartments, I think, still too much. One is the morphology, if you wish, anatomic pathology, and the other is function. And again, those two compartments have remained separate, and there are classical discussions that go back to the 18th century about is it more important form or is function that creates the organ, if you wish. And again, these are just two aspects, different aspects of the same reality. It is a bit like the wave and the particle function for the physicist. For the biologist, it is function and form, but really it is the same entity. And that's easy to see oops. And that didn't come through. Again, it's easy to see at the molecular level. So there was a slide in my Mac that had a transmembrane receptor, a growth receptor. When it receives the ligand, it moves, and the two parts of the molecule that phosphorylate each other make contact and get phosphorylated. And that explains how it works. It's exquisitely dependent on the form of the molecule. And of course, it also tells us where to intervene in terms of drug design, because we can make small molecules that will interfere with that kissing of both of the sides of the molecule, both as subunits, that creates the phosphorylation, the biochemical activity. So again, at the molecular level, the structure and the form, the structure and the chemistry are inseparable. As you go up in levels of organization, this unity of chemistry and form gets lost and it separates. And of course, we do study the form very well at different levels, but it is difficult many times to understand the molecular details that drive bottom-up the mechanics of lung physiology. And in fact, lung physiology can be very well captured functionally without much of the understanding of the molecular details that drive the movement, for example, among the cells or inside the cells or between the cells and the extracellular matrix. But those are the scales of morphology that we use when we study tissues. And again, a point that I like to make is that more and more we have to integrate across scales, and so that we have to devise ways of working that allow us to take the meter scale of dimension and go down to the micron and perhaps go down to the angstrom. And certainly when we use immunohistochemistry, I would submit to you that what we are probing are a few amino acids that make an epitope of a molecule. So we normally do a certain transscale integration, but in terms of our model building of disease, we tend to, again, be oriented in one level, in one dimension, and not think much about cross scales. And again, I think that one of the advantages of driving a fusion with diagnostic imaging is that you would really would affect an integration between the molecular scale and the gross body scale. So we can look at tissues morphologically and we have been doing it for centuries. We also will look at tissues in terms of function, and we look at the chemistry of life. And of course, you can do metabolomics, you can look at small molecules, you can determine the amount of any chemical that you can measure in the tissue, or you can really look at the dogma, if you wish, of molecular biology by looking at DNA and looking at RNA that's in the same tissue and looking at the proteins that's made from this RNA. And we can do that with a number of what I would call new microscopes. So what has happened in the last 20 years is that technology has produced a variety of high-throughput devices that enable us either to look at structural alterations of the DNA or look at levels of RNA and gene expression, if you wish, in a tissue, and look at the proteome or at the different proteins that are present in the tissue in a very high information, high density content of data, and correlate those properties to the medical characteristics of the tissue. So it's not unlike morphology, and that's why I think of those as new microscopes, because it's really looking at the tissue and extracting information in a different way. Of course, those technologies are very different. I just thought I would give you an example of one of the latest arrivals, which is a technology that's been devised by Paul Lizardi at Yale, and that we have used to look at certain kinds of tumors of the head and neck. And you can see that it probes the tissue and it uses 380,000 probes to look at a little sample of tissue. And it does that dividing the molecules that it will probe by their state of methylation. So what this technology does really is ask, is that position in the genome methylated or unmethylated? And because methylation in the DNA occurs at CpG islands, the probes are built to look and assess the status of methylation of a given CpG island in the genome that's present in different families of genes. For example, you can see that we probed very carefully what we call repeated sequences, because we know little about what happens to those sequences in the genome. And what you get is 500,000 data points, but that you can organize and display, and evidently for that you need information technology, you need computational biology, and you need all the tools that you are well aware of to begin to organize the knowledge and display it. And you can see that this is a technology that works, it's reproducible, and then when you start looking at tumors and normal tissues, you do the same. You start defining alterations that are present in many tumors, are absent in normal tissues from normal individuals, and curiously enough, they begin to appear in tissues that are morphologically normal in patients that are bearing a tumor in the same site. So those are really patients with oral cancer. When you look away from the cancer at the oral cavity, it's interesting that you begin to see very specific alterations that recur and recur again in those tissue, indicating perhaps that we have a way to measure what we call field effect. So that you can think of that as a, quote, molecular dysplasia in the tissues. And that clearly will provide, probably, I would guess, that thousands of, quote, biomarkers will come from that exercise of looking at what happens to the methylation, to the epigenetic state of DNA in those tissues. And that's a wonderful tool. It gives us information. It can be integrated. It can be simplified. Probably it will be boiled down in the next 5 to 10 years from hundreds of biomarkers to the 3 or 4 relevant biomarkers for each tissue location that are informative to understand what's the level of risk of this tissue, for example, that has not yet developed a tumor. And you can also put it to work to make a diagnosis that it's not based now on morphology, but it's a classification of disease that's present on this characteristic, again, the epigenetic methylation of CpG islands in the DNA. And you can see that if those 300,000 probes, you take the best 500, you can do a very nice classification. Those are the normal tissues, and those are the tumors. You can tell them apart very nicely. And in the tumors, there are perhaps 2 different regions that look different, and those are characteristics that can be explored, sorted out, correlated, to build perhaps a prognostic classification or a theragnostic classification, one that will pose an indication to therapy. So you can look, you can extract information of the tissue without any regard for the morphology. You can just grind the tissue at best from the gross scale of inspection and go right straight to the molecular level of analysis or the submolecular level of analysis. You can also, of course, use technologies that combine the morphology with the molecular level, and this is an example of glands from a colonic carcinoma, and now you can microdissect them, isolate them, and ask what is their genotype with regards to 3 markers. And what you discover is that tumors that we thought were fairly uniform and clonal really, when you look at the characteristics of the cell population at that scale, at the scale of a single gland, about 1,000 cells, or between 1,000 and 5,000 cells, you find out that there is a tremendous amount of diversity in those cells that sit and make up the tumor. And not only are there cells that are hemizygous and homozygous living together next to each other without the homozygously mutated for two genes taking over the hemizygously mutated, but there are cells that are tumor cells that have a wild-type genotype for those two genes that drive the tumor characteristics, the tumor phenotype in this case. This is a colonic carcinoma. So what that tells you is that the clonality of tumors for many of the genes that are important to make a tumor is in question, and the tumors are very diverse. And of course, this is very important when you think about therapy, because that's the basis for drug resistance. You may hit the yellow ones, but the red ones or the green ones are happy, and all that what you are doing is create space for the other cell type to grow. And so being able to look at tumors at that level of complexity, which again entails the fusion, if you wish, of morphology by picking phenotypically tumor cells and then assessing them for tumor genotype, enables you to model what's happening in the tissue in the human. And that's another aspect where I think IT is going to be crucial, is in the modeling of human data real time. There is no question that we are in a situation where we can get those data very fast, we can model them very fast, and not only can we have an imaging of the tumor in vivo, as obtained by conventional technologies like MRI and MRI, but we can also have an analysis of samples of the tumors that, with modeling tools, will enable us to reconstruct the tumor and will enable us to then play this tumor forward in time, a little bit like the weather people do with the storms. They really have models that gather data from the storm where it is, and they model and project the future of the storm. And I would submit to you that with the proper tools, and I think we have many of them, we will be able to project the life of the tumor forward and even intelligently decide what cell populations do we want to kill and what's going to happen when we kill a certain cell population. And that sounds a little bit like Star Trek medicine, but I think that it's not more than 10 years away. Now, all these modalities are really predicated on keeping the morphology and the function, if you wish, separate. One can also, because of progress in technology and immunofluorescence and detection and spectral cameras, begin to, on the same piece of tissue, interrogate the status of different molecules in terms of location and in terms of amount. So immunofluorescence clearly enables us to have a pretty good idea about the quantity of a certain protein, in this case, that's present in the tissue, and we can certainly have enough microscopy to be able to track that protein in its compartment, even subcellular compartment, whether it's in the nucleus or in the cytoplasm or in the Golgi or in the membrane. And we can merge those images in a single one, thus beginning to create a still picture, if you wish. It's still a still picture. It's a photograph of the biology of the tissue at a given point, but with a richer level of complexity and with some functional parameters, because we know the players and the functions that those proteins carried out. And of course, if you can think of any organ and any compartment in the organ, but you can combine those biomarkers, if you wish, of function and put them, overlay them on the tissue, in a way almost using the tissue as we use a DNA chip with probes, but here we use the tissue as a chip with antibody probes and detection, that enables us to extract information. And we now can do in a reliable way about 4 antibodies to 5 antibodies at the same time on the same section, so that you can get a pretty complete picture of what's happening in that organ. And you can overlay those images. This is a DAPI fluorescence that tells you those are nuclei. This is a fluorescence that tells you it's a nucleus that has androgen receptor. This happens to be a prostatic cancer. And this tells you that those nuclei that have androgen receptor in this portion of the cancer are in proliferative cyclic mode because they are expressing Ki67, which is synthesizing cells that are cycling. So you begin to be able to analyze that cancer not only in terms of morphology, but in terms of cell compartments and in terms of the function of the cells. And you can do this using more complex parameters in morphology and biomarkers and begin to integrate it. And then those data have a tremendous attribute in terms of their plasticity and tractability. They are all digital data. And of course, radiology and diagnostic imaging is digital, and you get histology that it's digital, and you get protein contents that it's digital, and you get their localization in space that has become marked digital. And this is just an example of how you can also extract a tremendous amount of quantitative data from the images that we use for pattern recognition by technology of machine vision that enables you to segment the object, classify it, and then quantify it after the classification by the machine and generate a series of quantitative parameters that, again, you can then massage in any way you want to mine that information for predictive or diagnostic content. And again, you can combine this, for example, with the functional immunohistochemistry, and you can get images now here that not only tell you the number of nuclei, their size, shape, texture, and their disposition, but they also look at nuclei that have a positivity for Ki67 and that they are expressing in the nucleus phosphorylated AKT, which tells you that a signal pathway has been activated. So you can begin to probe the functionality of the tumor tissue in a fairly detailed way. And again, another example of functional morphology and quantitative morphology, what I call colloquially Q-phenomics because it's the phenotype but now quantified, is, for example, an analysis of the neighbors, the number of neighbors that are available for each given nucleus. And you can see that there are nuclei here that are in red that happen to be those that have in this region of interest more than 3 neighbors. And you can do this by 3, 4 more neighbors and begin to obtain quantitative parameters that can be extracted from the tissue by a machine and help define the features of the tissue in a objective and quantitative way. So you end at the end with biomarkers, which are biochemical species that you can measure in tissues, but you now understand the spatial architecture. For example, are different tissue units like hair follicles or in the skin or crypts in the colon diverse in their biomarker content? Are cells in a tissue unit, in a tissue patch, heterogeneous in terms of biomarker content? Are there diverse cell types that were not present in the normal, in the pathological tissue unit marker? And what's the localization of the biomarker at the subcellular level? So you can, again, begin to build a lot of information. And ideally, what you want to do is a cartography of the biomarkers like we have done for a long time with gross morphology combined with histology, but now begin to layer on molecular attributes and morphometric attributes on those different areas so that you can have a molecular classification. So what I would like to infect you with is the idea that we can build, if we have the right tools, and we have the right chemical and hardware tools, but we need the informatic tools, we can build a systems pathology which aims really at integrating all levels of functional and morphological information in one single coherent model that allows us to manipulate disease in silico. And we are beginning to do that with some success, and it's clearly requires a practice that both gathers data bottom up, if you wish, so very comprehensive data sets, be it morphology or function, and bottom down in terms of the understanding of what the networks need to do. And it is very integrative because it can, thanks to the digital nature of all these quantities and all in all the fields, you can begin to do relational databases that integrate that information. And again, you can begin to mine that information either with, essentially with artificial intelligence, to extract classifiers that will provide a tremendous amount of specificity and power to both the diagnosis and the prediction of the natural history of the disease. So it really is all about capturing the complex properties of the system without either neglecting the deterministic interactions at the molecular level or the probabilistic interactions at the macroscopic level that govern, for example, the interaction of different cell types in the body. And it's really all about understanding not only the parts of the engine that drive the cars, but what is at the root of the problems of traffic in a city. And again, understanding with exquisite detail at the molecular level what happens is not sufficient to understand what creates the traffic jams. And I think we need to come from both ends, and we've been very successful at this end, and we are beginning, I think, to have success at this end to understand disease and be able to apply really complex systems biology to medicine. And that, of course, cannot be done, again, without the support of computational biology and informatics. There are factors that I think are pushing hard for the adoption of such style of practice. Probably the major one will be therapeutic target validation and pharmacoeconomics by doing the right thing for the right person at the right time and avoiding wasting resources, drugs, and capacity of the medical system when it's not indicated. And in the near future, I think we are beginning to see ways in which we can assess in a quantitative fashion the risk for disease, and hopefully this will push preventive medicine to the front line if we have the right tools to begin to predict the individual risk and follow the individual risk as we intervene. So whether we will have the right surrogate points, endpoints to implement preventive medicine is still unknown, but there are a couple of examples, I think, that are promising. So those are the forces that are pushing, again, the systems approach in diagnostics. The sequence of the genome really and the HapMap provide already the capacity to sequence an individual. And as you probably know, Craig Venter and Jim Watson were some of the two first sequence persons that made their sequence available. the sequence technologies think that in a couple of years we will be able to have our sequence for about $2,000, and there are plenty of companies that are already selling SNPs, parts of the sequences, like 23andMe, to individual people. So there will be a rapid shift of the present paradigm to push for personalized medicine that I think will have an impact on pathology and on diagnostic pathology. And finally, I think that the training challenges are difficult to overcome because I think we don't have the organization, the academical organization and the infrastructure that it's required for a truly transdisciplinary training. And just the challenge of talking across culture, the challenge of having young pathologists talking to optical engineers that work on machine vision is considerable. The challenge of knowing how to acquire the data, mine them, and display them, and transfer information, again, are considerable and not to be underestimated. And I would certainly welcome an effort to look at what challenges do we have to face in the next 5-10 years to prepare the younger generations for this brave new world. Finally, just the notion that I think if you look at the fusion of form and function, anatomical pathology and clinical pathology, I think what's at the end is very threatening to pathologists. Many people ask me, well, or did ask me in the past, will a race high throughput technologies put us out of business? And the answer is clearly no. There is no way that they can do better or they can do without us. But what may put us out of business is functional imaging. Because in the fusion I was telling you that you can do in tissues, there are already areas where you can do morphology in real time and assess what's happening at the molecular level in real time at the same, in the same instance. So the fluorescences I showed you on sections can be done in vivo, a single fluor at a time for the moment, but are extremely revealing of not only the structure of the tissue, but the function of the tissue. So I use the word molecular dysplasia. Now you can see molecular dysplasia in real time. I happen to have a friend who sits in Barcelona doing endoscopies with the GI guy. He's a pathologist, and they sit together because they do two-photon endoscopy, which means that they are looking at the colonic mucosa, reconstructing them, the images, cutting them like you see on a slide, and looking at aberrant crypt foci and flat polyps. So it will be not long for that endoscopist to be able to spray something on the tissue and assess whether it's RAS mutated and P53 mutated. And then I think we are in danger. So that's probably maybe 10 years from now, but it's certainly not farther than 10 years away. So we have very little time, I think, to reposition the young guys coming up and to reposition the discipline so that we can face the real challenge of functional morphology at the cellular level in vivo. So I tried to summarize some of the ways that tissue analysis and extracting tissue information from tissue is changing nowadays, and how it does relate to the discipline at large and to the needs in informatics, and how I think would help to shape the development and research agenda of informatics so that we can continue to have the kind of intimate relationship, really, that one sees in structure and function in life. Thank you very much.